I'll call the Education Finance Committee meeting to order. We do not have a quorum as of right now, so we will start with Representative Ann Zell's bill. And to your bill, Representative Ann Zell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, I'm joined here with Mr. Tom Kelleher from the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association, because this bill, 2918, has to do with school buses, kids, school districts, and the Department of Education. Back in 2011, in the 2011 session last year, we made some changes to how costs were reported, the cost allocation method, and we eliminated the ability of districts to allocate expenditures for transportation on a cost per hour and or cost per route basis. And for reasons that I don't completely understand, this legislation, as brought forward by the school bus people, would reinstate that opportunity to report transportation expenditures on a cost per hour and cost per route level. That's essentially the bill, and Mr. Kelleher and I will hopefully be able to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Kelleher, did you have anything?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. Just to add to what Representative Anzell said, just sort of to put it in context, school bus contractors do not report directly to the Department of Education. We report to the school district, who reports to the Department of Education. And what this bill section is what those reports shall look like. And if you turn to page 2 on the back, you can see that what we'd like to do is have cost per hour and cost per route reinstated into statute. On line 2.5, cost per mile and cost per student are already in current law. And while we did see this legislation last year, we didn't think of it as it would be as much of an importance to us as we found out later. There were a number of school districts that did not like that this option was not available. I think for my contractors, having these other two options included back in the cost allocation reporting methodology to the districts, then in turn to the school, the Department of Education, provides an easy and expedient way for us to provide that data and that information. A lot of times, a lot of the school bus operators that I represent are smaller, work in smaller towns, and it's just a more simple, less intensive methodology for reporting to the district and turn to the department. I have talked to the Minnesota School Bus, the Minnesota School Board Association, the St. Paul School Districts, the Minneapolis School Districts, and a couple of others, and MAPT, the Minnesota Association of Pupil Transportation, is here as well. And I think we're all pretty much okay with putting this language back in, and nobody has really offered up a rationale for why it was taken out. And as I said, for us, we think it's just a more efficient, expedient way to report. And I talked to Tom Melcher, the Department of Education, and he seemed to not have a lot of ownership in this language and didn't seem to care whether it was put back into statute or not.
All right, seeing that we do have a quorum right now, Representative Anzell, would you like to move your bill then?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 2918 be passed and
will be
for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Great. Representative Anzell's moves House File 2918 be laid over and for possible inclusion. All those in favor? Sorry, we're not doing that. We'll continue here. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify either in favor or have concerns on this bill? Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. Jan Vanderwall from the Roseville School District has joined me as well. But really, just want to echo a lot of what Mr. Kelleher said. There was some, when this was being proposed last year, school districts didn't think anything was being removed in the way that they could report. They just thought that another option was being added. and the removal of those options has caused some consternation on the part of school folks, and so we would support the language of, you know, putting those options back in. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. I'm Jan Vanderwaal from Roseville School District. I'm the transportation coordinator for the district, and I can shed a little light on why we would want to have these options back in. A bus allocation system that just goes on miles. What we were talking about this with some business managers. One of them came up and said, you know, we have a bus that's a wheelchair bus. It has a one-mile route. It picks up one child, and that's what it does during the day, and it comes back to school, and then in the afternoon it does the same thing. So it gets a two-mile allocation. When you try to route that, you know, when you take your costs and you allocate them based just on the miles, you find that this bus can be allocated on a two-mile basis, whereas it costs about $400 a day. You can probably charge about $20 of that to the actual cost. And so it's not always accurate to say that mileage is the only way to do it. Sometimes it should be routes, sometimes it's time. And in my school district, we use hours as our basic contracting method. And yet I know that routes works better in my district because we have multiple routes during the day. Some of them are special ed, some of them are regular, some of them are for desegregation programs. That's primarily the reason we would like to see this go back. One of the other things, there are always, and Tom would agree with me, that there are winners and losers under any kind of a logical format. And by having three different choices, every school district has can look at it, see which way works best for them for whatever reason, and it can be that district's choice as to how they report their stuff and still will fit within a logical framework and a fair way of accounting our transportation expenses.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Please come on down. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. As you know, this the change that was made last year was a change that sailed through pretty non-controversially. It was just an idea that we had to make transportation costs a little more simpler and more uniform. But since Dr. Melcher's name was brought up, I thought it'd be a good idea to have him come up here and maybe give you some background on why the change was made last year and why that may still be preferable to keep the language as it is.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The subject of the bill here is how we do cost allocations for transportation, and the reason that that's important is the cost allocations drive how much aid we pay for state special education aid and non-public pupil transportation. And the goal that the department has is to make sure we have a uniform process so that the aides are paid in a fair and reasonable manner across the state. And for a number of years, we have had multiple options for a school district to use as they allocate their costs. Last year, the department brought forward a change that was intended to simplify the cost allocation methodology. Currently, 84% of the school districts and charter schools are allocating their costs based on mileage, and 2% based on hours, and 14% based on routes, and it was felt that it would be kind of more fair and uniform if all of the school districts were allocating their costs the same methodology rather than kind of shopping around for which method provided more funding for the school district. So this is not a huge issue for us, but we felt that the change that was made last year was based on the idea that we want the cost allocation to be done in a fair and uniform way across the state and for all districts to use the same method.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2918? Seeing none, we'll go to questions from committee members. Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Ward.
Representative Mariani and I came in late. Could he please repeat everything that he said?
Before we vote against it.
Enzels, would you like to repeat everything that was just said?
I think this is the beginning of a very difficult day here.
Well, seeing no questions, Representative Enzels, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes. I would move that House File 2918 be laid over for possible inclusion in another bill.
All right. House File 2918 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard, would you like to move the minutes of March 21st?
So moved.
Representative Woodard moves the minutes March 21st. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. These minutes are approved. And we will move to House File 2792, and the chair will move that. We do have a DE1 amendment. Now, also the chair will move the DE1 amendment. If Mr. Crowe, could you please... Representative Debke could not be here at this time. Mr. Crowe will explain the DE1 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, as you remember, the House File 2792 provides Wayzata the ability to use the building lease levy to lease administrative space if the administrative space is cheaper than a proposed instructional lease. What the DE1 amendment does is take that general language about and amends it into the statute on the building lease. And so you see on page 3 the change is paragraph I basically mirrors the language that was in the original bill but allows it for any school district. These kind of specific exceptions have been allowed fairly routinely, and including the one that you passed for the Faribault School District already this year. And and since the levy is since the district has to levy that the or certify that the administrative space cost is no greater than the lease cost for instructional space, there isn't a levy impact in terms of our tracking for tracking school property tax levies.
Thank you, Mr. Crowe. Is there any discussion to the amendment? And the chair will renew his motion to amend DE1 to House File 2792. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That DE1 is passed amended. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on the bill as amendment? House File 2791? Or 2792. Seeing none, are there any questions from members? The chair will renew his motion to pass House File 2792, be referred to taxes. Be referred to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. And it is approved. 2792 will be removed to taxes. Representative Downey to House File 2939. Where are these all the time, Jody? Going back and forth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House File 2939 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Would you like to move your author's amendments as well, Representative Downey?
Mr. Chair, if I could move the amendment to get it in the proper form, and then I can explain the bill, which is entirely contained in the amendment. So I'd move the A1 amendment.
Representative Downey moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor or say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A1 is approved. You have another author's amendment, Representative Downey?
Mr. Chair, I thought I did, but I didn't see it in the packets. If others have it, I'm glad to move it. Otherwise, it's an effective date change. We can certainly deal with that at a later time.
We'll do that at a later date.
It's fine. The amendment was just simply to make it effective immediately upon passage, which I think might actually be inferred anyway, but it was just to make sure that that was certain. So I'm glad to just proceed with the bill as is.
Okay. Representative, now to your bill as amended.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We've had a situation in my town that has become more acute and a bigger issue for the folks in a certain neighborhood here in the last 20 years or so, as that neighborhood has now become fully developed. And I have a gentleman here who can explain that, a fellow who's organized the neighborhood to really pursue looking into how to solve this problem for the neighborhood, and he can give you more of the details. But I provided a map for you, and you can see in the upper left-hand corner of the city of Edina a landlocked, entirely self-contained neighborhood in our city that by virtue of a historical boundary line drawing is included in the Hopkins School District, which on the one hand is not really a problem. The neighborhood further to the north is kind of right next door and adjacent to and shares a neighborhood environment with the city of Hopkins. But you can't see it real well on the map, but the reality is this particular neighborhood has a ball field, a cemetery, and a series of lakes and some lowlands to the north of it that really separates it physically. There's a very significant physical boundary from the other Hopkins neighborhoods. And you can also notice that it is basically one and the same with the neighborhood to its south. So this area was developed. The streets have the same name. The people all go to the same parks and those kinds of things. And this landlocked neighborhood, as you can see by the rough little drawing I did of the Hopkins school boundary, is in the Hopkins school boundary. And is literally a couple of blocks away from two elementary schools in the city of Edina, and yet the kids in that neighborhood are bused across Excelsior and Avenue and across 169 to a school district that, or to a school building that's quite far away. And so these neighbors, the people in this neighborhood, have historically opted for open enrollment in Edina, but as open enrollment gets tighter and the queues get more limited, it's an ever-increasing problem. And so here's this group of people who are really just part of an overall neighborhood, and yet they have to send their kids off to a school that's a perfectly fine school, but just isn't a neighborhood school. And so they've been looking for a way to petition to become part of the Edina schools. And right now, state law says that you have to get the permission of the detachment district and the annexation district before you can go and petition the county board. And so this bill simply says, under these kind of, under a narrow set of circumstances, where you're contained in a city, where the district that you're in doesn't have a school for you, and another district in that city does have a school for you, that you can petition the county with just the approval of the annexation district instead of requiring the approval of both the detachment and the annexation district. So that's what this is intended to do, and I think I'm glad to take questions now on the bill. It might be helpful just to hear a little bit more of the history from Mr. Kohler here, if members are willing to hear his testimony and then go to questions.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Alan Kohler.
Go ahead, Mr. Kohler.
Thank you, Chairman Garofalo. My name is Alan Kohler, and I'm speaking to you today on behalf of over 400 families in our neighborhood who very strongly support the passage of this bill. Our neighborhood, which is located northwest quadrant of the city of Edina, is subject to a school district boundary that was established in approximately the 1880s. Obviously, this boundary was established well before the land was transformed from rural farms to suburban communities, and without any reference to the future neighborhoods that would be created. To quote a voice from the past, quote, "There was no advanced planning in setting up our school district. It was a question of where a farmer's fence happened to be that made the borders," end quote. This comes from a survey published by the Edina Morningside League of Women Voters in September 1957 and highlights the level of thought that went into creating the original district boundary lines. The year 1957 is proximate to the era when the former farms located in our area began to be transformed into streets, homes, and eventually the neighborhood in which we live and raise our families. Unfortunately, the lack of advanced planning and absence of foresight when the school district boundaries were first established has meant that our neighborhood is bisected by a boundary that is arbitrary, illogical, and which creates unnecessary harm for our families. Our neighborhood is adjoined by three elementary schools, one junior high school, and a senior high school that are all located in close proximity to our homes, and all are reachable via residential streets. These schools are operated by ISD 273 and are located in the community in which we live. However, due to the legacy of expedient decisions made in the 1880s, our survey district is considered to be ISD 270, which has never operated a school in our neighborhood, has never operated a school within our city of residence, and the schools which they do operate are located twice as far away as those referenced above, and require transportation via state highways. It probably will not surprise you to hear that, given these two alternatives, the families in our neighborhood have overwhelmingly chosen to enroll their children, when permitted, in the schools which are actually located within our community. I'd like to illustrate this point. There are approximately 200 school-aged children living in our neighborhood. Of these, 63% are enrolled in schools operated by ISD 273, whereas only 5% attend schools operated by our quote-unquote serving district, ISD 270. This percentage would be even lower if it were not for children attending the Chinese immersion school. I would like to reemphasize why this has occurred. Once upon a time, ISD 270 operated an elementary school that was in close proximity to our neighborhood. That school was closed over two decades ago. The subsequent elementary school that was to serve our neighborhood was located in downtown Hopkins. That second school was closed 5 years ago. The current school is located further away yet. Even more daunting, the junior high school and senior high school are located two suburbs away from our neighborhood. The open enrollment program has enabled families in our neighborhood, in most cases, to eventually enroll their children in these local schools, but the system creates a great deal of uncertainty and even anguish. In any given year, ISD 273 may or may not have the capacity to open enroll our children into a specific grade level, and there is no certainty that these children will be able to attend the same school as the other children on their block, or even the same school as their siblings. In the case of my family, we were unable to open enroll our daughter into kindergarten at any of the three schools near our home. And so we had to find her an alternative school until she was finally able to open enroll in first grade. We do not know if we will be able to open enroll our four-year-old son into the same district, much less the same school as his older sister. It appears the next year, the elementary age children who live in our immediate vicinity will attend at least three different public elementary schools. Additionally, our families that are able to open and enroll the children are unable to vote for or serve on the school board which governs the schools these children attend. Then there is the issue that our tax dollars continue to be paid to one school district while our children are educated by another. There is a clear and logical argument that the designation of our school district serving our neighborhood needs to change. Support for such change extends beyond families with school-aged children. We conducted a door-to-door survey of the families in our neighborhood and found over 98% support among all homeowners for making this change. This survey included 70% of 400-plus families we considered, so we consider it to be statistically significant. These are the surveys we received in response. I think you will appreciate that getting 98% agreement on any issue involving education is quite remarkable. Minnesota State Statute 1238.45, Detachment and Annexation of Land, provides a roadmap for situations such as ours. However, it lacks significant details and criteria and contains legacies of the agrarian past that are not relevant today for metropolitan districts. For example, Subdivision 2, Paragraph B says the detachment should not reduce the size of any district to less than four sections. Additionally, Paragraph C states the consent of the board of the detachment district is required if that district operates a secondary school. It should be obvious that this clause about operating a secondary school is completely outdated, irrelevant, and an impediment to making necessary boundary changes. We are respectfully requesting that this paragraph be amended via the proposed legislation so that the consent of the detachment district is only required if that district operates a school within the city which contains the petitioner's land. This is a far superior way of determining whether the detachment district has been fulfilling its role as a serving district. Even with the proposed changes, it will still be incumbent upon the members of our neighborhood to file any and all detachment petitions with the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners, at which point a hearing would be conducted and the board would receive and hear any evidence for or against the filed petitions. In 1893, 41 residents of what was then a part of Minneapolis sent the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners a petition requesting that a separate village be formed. An election was held and the village was incorporated as West Minneapolis. This change did not require the consent or endorsement of the Minneapolis City Council. The citizens of those days realized that boundaries sometimes need to be changed in order to better serve their needs. It is possible that some of those same citizens were responsible for creating the original boundary of what was then called School District 19. Today, this village is known as the City of Hopkins. This voice from the past tells us that boundaries are not sacrosanct and inviolate, but do need to be changed from time to time when they have outlived their stated purpose and become a detriment to the citizens who live within them. We request the same opportunity to pursue the same due process as those citizens of 1893. Thank you for taking me the time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kohler. Before, or we may have some questions for you, but before that, I'd like to ask if there's any public testimony, anyone who would like to speak on House File 2939. Seeing none, are there any questions for the testifier? Representative Manziel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, your testifier did a very effective job of taking us down memory lane here. It was 46 years ago, 1968 to be exact, when I did my student teaching in the Hopkins District. And I wholeheartedly support your bill.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got some questions before I wholeheartedly support the bill. Let's just talk about annexation to start with. And I'm on a bill with the counties, and I don't know if anybody else in here is, but it's a bill that basically says, you know, one government body, local government body, doesn't have more power over another government body to do annexation. If a city wants to annex a township, there should be equal authority for each to agree to that, not the city just saying, you know, we want you and we're going to take you. So I'm concerned that's in play here. Am I wrong on that, Representative Downey, or testifier?
Representative Downey.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll give a brief answer, and if Mr. Kohler wants to add on, I'm glad to have him do that. It's interesting, as I have worked with Mr. Kohler and his group here literally for a couple of years now. They've kind of gone through the entire process and figured out what their opportunities and rights were in this circumstance. And one of the suggestions that I made that we explored a bit was, could we grant to a group of people like this the same petitioning capability that you would have in a municipal annexation? And it works differently, and the intent here isn't to kind of rewrite all of the school district annexation law, but in a case like this, where very clearly the law in its most general state, I think, provides a significant barrier to a group that has all kinds of legitimate interests to pursue here. It really stifles their voice as a group of citizens in this neighborhood to come forward and have, you know, some chance at getting their petition responded to. So I think this is the best solution. I mean, you know, we could have just hard-coded a district change in state law too, right, and said, well, this chunk of Edina will go into the Edina district. But, you know, and I think there's a bigger principle in play here, and kind of the justification, the warrant for their request is the circumstances that they're in, and if those circumstances existed somewhere else, I would want those same families to have that right in another area that's being developed quickly that falls into this spot. So I thought this was the best way to resolve it, and I'm glad to have Mr. Kohler chime in.
Points that I would just make. One is, as a reference in my testimony, in the existing statutes, the only criteria that appears in there is that it does not diminish the size of the detaching district by to less than four sections. Other than that, there is no criteria. It's absolutely silent. And so, you know, under what basis would a detaching district endorse or not endorse? There's no criteria at all. And the other aspect is, you know, as Representative Downey just stated, we would just like to have the same access to due process as someone that wanted to secede from a municipality and join another. And again, that type of process does allow for people to weigh in both for and against, and it seems an equal opportunity type of opportunity. Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you to both for, you know, that explanation. Representative Downey, do you anticipate or see at all then the unintended consequences of this carrying over to municipality litigation as annexation through the municipalities? So do you think that this can be a factor at all going forward with other government bodies?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ward, great question. I actually poured through statute and tried to find every place where annexation was statutorily prescribed, and there are, I don't know, there's got to be at least a dozen different places, you know, park districts, watershed, all these places, right? And they each have their own section of statute and the prescription or the process by which annexation occurs is different in each area. So I don't know how someone could infer from a change in one isolated area here in school district annexation how that would somehow kind of, you know, repopulate itself in a bunch of different areas. They all have their own section of law, and I think they're pretty tightly bounded, at least as I read it in statute.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Downey. You're convincing me, kind of, you know. Mr. Downey, or Representative Downey, or Mr.
Kohler.
Mr. Kohler. This wouldn't even be coming forward, would it? If Edina recently closed their open enrollment district wide, I mean, would this be coming forward if Edina had not closed their open enrollment?
Representative Downey or Mr. Kohler?
You know, Mr. Chair, I'll have Mr. Kohler speak first. I have an opinion, but I'd be curious to hear the perspective of the neighbors first.
Okay.
Mr. Kohler.
Yes, I believe it would for a couple of reasons. One, as I referenced in my testimony, open enrollment is still kind of a vague system. You know, you may get into the school district, but that does not guarantee you can go to the school closest to your home, the school of the same one as your siblings. So it doesn't guarantee you anything. And it's always at capacity is kind of the caveat. With capacity, we can enroll your children. The second issue that I did bring up as well is that even when you are open enrolled, you live in a state of limbo, and that your children are part of a district, but you cannot participate in school board elections. You cannot serve on a school board. You can serve via PTO organizations, but that's not the same. And then there's the underlying problem is that, you know, if all your children attend one district and all your property taxes go to a different one, you're ending up, you don't want to overemphasize it, but a little bit of taxation of the representation. You can't vote in the elections where your kids go to school, yet where your money is being spent, you're not even involved anymore. And so, again, even if that were available, open enrollment all the time, we would still be in a state of limbo. And it still doesn't solve the fact that our neighborhood is served by local schools, but those local schools are not in our serving district. Thank you.
Representative Ward?
Representative Doherty, did you want
to? Oh, no. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Ward. I was going to point out there's some bigger issues here just besides the fact that the queues for open enrollment always are kind of in flux and subject to new terms.
And
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Corey, you're absolutely right, is that, you know, most of us have districts that now we don't have a choice of sending our children to a school that, like, for example, in Brainerd, that was one of the things that we had an opportunity to send our children to an elementary school of their choice. But with the cuts to funding in education, which have resulted in cuts to funding for, to our school districts, that was eliminated. So now these geographical boundaries are set up just like we're talking about right here. And so you don't have the opportunity of the choice. So, you know, there is a bigger picture here, Representative Downey, just like you said, about the lack of education funding to our school districts in the state of Minnesota over the past decade of, you know, less than 13% with inflation adjustment. So there is a bigger picture, quite frankly. And that leads me to my next question about, would this result in a loss of revenue to Hopkins School District?
To testifier or to Representative Downey? What's your question? Or to staff?
Either one. Our staff, I don't care.
Go ahead.
I mean, would this, the implementation of this, wouldn't it result in the loss of revenue to the Hopkins School District, for example?
Well, ultimately, yes. If we did detach and annex to another school district, ultimately all of our tax dollars would flow to the district that served us. However, according to the statutes, there probably would be a hybrid period where some of our taxes continue to be paid to the serving district, the detaching district, until all the board-approved bonded obligations lapsed. So in our case, I mean, there's some that go out to about 2021. There are two alternatives in the statutes. I would be surprised if Hopkins said, in this case, let's just do a clean cut and start starting next year, you pay all your taxes to the new annexing district, but so for a while there'd be a kind of a legacy where some would be paid to the former and some to the new serving district.
Representative Ward, did you have a follow-up?
No, Representative Downey, looked like you wanted to say something.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, I just wanted to make the point that in terms of the per pupil funding, I don't want to say it's a wash, but, you know, a child who open enrolls out of the Hopkins district into Edina, the per pupil funding follows them, so it's less about the kind of the year-to-year budgeting, and it has more to do with the levy and the property tax issues. And as Mr. Kohler explained, there's some options there to give the detachment district a soft landing.
Representative Downey, I'm just catching up on things. Did you guys move the A1 amendment already?
Yes, okay. Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Ward, any follow-up? Are you done?
No, I'm not done.
Representative Ward.
So I think my last question or comment, maybe a question is, you know, would this, and Representative Downey, I think everybody wants to attend Edina. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, we all want to have those great opportunities that Edina has. And I say that respectfully. I say it respectfully, Representative Downey. I hope you understand, realize what I'm saying. And I know you do. So are we, this concerns me that we are, you know, with that statement, are we creating, you know, the districts that everybody wants to go to and nobody wants to go to in the state of Minnesota? Because, so let's annex, let's do this, use this annexation piece, you know, to create, you know, the wonderful, great opportunity districts while leaving others that are going to be losing, you know, revenue and having to cut staff and having to close their elementary schools has been statewide, having to cut programs and cut curriculum and all of the above. So are we creating a situation here that would, in fact, have that scenario going forward in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Ward. A couple of responses, and again, Mr. Kohler may want to chime in. So I've been watching this situation literally for a couple of years. The very first time I door knocked through these neighborhoods, trust me, this is the only thing anybody ever talks to me about when I walk through there, right? I mean,
yeah.
Anything else in the world could be going on that day, and this is what they asked me about. And this is, for me, way less about those kinds of issues and more about families in a neighborhood having a process and a voice and a way to actually have the fairness of this particular issue dealt with. And so for me, it's way less about who's in which district. If I couldn't define this statute any way other than just saying, well, this neighborhood goes into the Edina district, I think that charge would be a valid one. But I think there's a circumstance here that exists in this situation that could exist in a lot of other places as we start building out more compactly in some of the outer ring suburbs. So I think it's just a fairness thing and giving these people a chance to be heard as a neighborhood as compared to, gee, which district do you want to be in or not want to be in? And Mr. Kohler can maybe chime in too.
Mr. Kohler?
I would just say, first of all, that I spent most of my child living in outstate Minnesota, so I understand what you're saying. You know, for us, this isn't a vehicle to further empower the district. This really is just about, you know, coming of age, having children, realizing that going to a local school is very important for your family. You know, it really comes as simple as that. I mentioned earlier in my testimony that the schools in the serving district are twice as far as the local schools. And, you know, in a metropolitan area, that may not seem very far. But we did an analysis of the difference in travel times. And a kindergartner that would bus to the serving district versus going to the local school would spend the equivalent of going from Edina to Grand Marais in her kindergarten year, extra bus time. And that's extra bus expense. That's some of it's highway travel. And if that same student then continued on through graduation, that extra bus travel time or distance would be from Edina to Hanoi, Vietnam. And so even though you're saying, you know, metropolitan areas are kind of small, they're compact, it adds up. And so imagine if you're a parent and you have a junior high student who suddenly texts you that I left my saxophone at home, and one school is 5 minutes away, and the other one is basically commuting up Highway 169, you know, maybe 25 minutes each way.
Ooh.
You know, that has a profound impact on the family, much less, hey, Mom, can I stay after school because I don't want to work with my friends on this? Okay, you know, we just need to carve out an hour of our time to go up and get you and bring you back. And the likelihood that those families and children will be involved in after-school activities is greatly diminished. Again, when you're dealing with distances, is that. So that to us is more significant than, you know, let's just really pump up the district and make it even more powerful. I mean, I can tell you that that's really not what we're about.
Representative Ward.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kohler, I really understand and appreciate that perspective from also a legislator that has always been in real Minnesota and has been on the bus as a student and as a teacher and coach, and get it. And Representative Fabian, is, I mean, a lot of us around here get it. And so just my last kind of question, Representative Downey, is, you know, we talked about the tax base effect, you know, on this, on the proposal. Is there a revenue effect on here based on, you know, based on the per pupil unit? Is there a revenue effect on this that would come into play?
We'll have to go to, let me go to Strom and Crow on that one.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chair, that might be better.
Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, as Representative Downey mentioned, most of the funding does go on students served. So for the regular formula money and most of the other kinds of formulas, the students where they're served at is what generates the revenue. The exception is with the referendum, and voter-approved referendum are based on the resident pupil count within each district. So in this case, the number of students that are currently Hopkins District residents, doesn't matter whether they open enroll into another district or go to a charter school, they generate referendum revenue for the resident district. So there would be some resident effects, pupil effects for the district. And then as Representative Downey mentioned, there are also tax-based effects in both districts as property is moved from one to the other. As Mr. Kohler pointed out, the statute with the petitioning authorizes the process by which the debt can be split so that past debt for building bonds can remain on the property that's being attached or annexed to a new district.
So, Mr. Strom, just so I understand right then, so the RMCPU is going to change for both districts?
Yes.
Right? And neither district qualifies for equalization, so there's not going to be any state impact on that. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, both districts should be off of every equalization formula, I believe, but I can't say that with 100% certainty.
And then in terms of percentage of students under compensatory, the composition really, if the vast majority of this area is already open enrolling into another district, we're just changing where the residents of the students are. It wouldn't be a change in compensatory.
Mr. Chair, compensatory is based at the site on students served, so the district of residence would not matter for that. It's only if, as you say, there were behavioral shifts with students who would switch districts now that perhaps wouldn't have under open enrollment.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Downey, Mr. Kohler, thank you for your patience with me. I really appreciate it. And I'm not sure, you know, how I feel about this at this point. I can't make the same statement that Representative Anzelk did. Mr. Kohler, you mentioned Grand Marais. Are you from Grand Marais?
Actually, Grand Rapids.
Okay.
That's even better.
Representative.
I knew I shouldn't have asked that, Mr. Kohler. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Reinhart and then Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to start by saying I appreciate your testimony and I appreciate your concerns as a parent. I've been a strong advocate for neighborhood schools for my entire adult life. I don't think there's any replacing their value for a family or a community. So I appreciate the dilemma of your neighborhood, but I do have some process concerns. So my first question is, has the Hopkins School Board been involved either formally or informally in any of these discussions?
They've been informally. You say, the protocol here is that when you respond, you say, Mr. Chairman, and then
okay.
The members. The conversation goes through the chair, so that way people don't get in arguments.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Reinhart never says anything mean, though, so don't worry about it. So. Mr. Kohler.
They have been involved in informal conversations, yes. And they have been probably over the last 25 years.
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I'd like to ask what the current status of their involvement is, particularly in relation to this legislative proposal.
Mr. Kohler.
Mr. Chairman, none that I'm aware of.
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's my concern. I've spent 12 years on a school board, and I think as a school board member, I would be very receptive to the issues around the concerns that you've laid here, the information, the data, the level, the surveys, all those things, I think a local school board would be very interested in. And I'm concerned that we're bypassing an elected authority that, you know, that's designated in statute to deal with this. And we can, maybe some people are operating under the assumption that they'll automatically be dismissive of your concern. But I'm reluctant to go over their head from an authority point of view without more specific knowledge of their involvement in this particular proposal.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Downey, one second. Have you guys covered what the current process is right now for making this district? This would happen annually. What needs to happen? Is this law they feel what they have to work on? Yes, covered that. Okay. Representative Downey, would it be helpful for the committee to understand what would have to take place under current law to explain maybe why this hasn't happened already, or would you rather not have that process?
No, Mr. Chair, that would be great. I also wanted to mention, if Representative Breinert's concern is that we're doing something here without the awareness of the impacted districts, no, I have let the superintendent of schools in the Edina district, who was at a meeting with the Hopkins folks, so they are aware that this legislation is proceeding. I think with the sensitivities of it, they are hesitant to become overly active participants in the process and become kind of co-claimants in this whole thing. In some ways, they're looking for the state to just arbitrate a fair process for them as compared to their individual circumstances right now, this very minute, to somehow become predominant. And that's, again, why we've written it the way we have, so that it becomes a new process for a certain set of circumstances that could exist in a lot of different places. So I appreciate your concern. And, Mr. Chair, that would be great. Thank you.
Representative Breinert, is that okay if we just have Mr. Strom briefly go through what the current, what needs to take place under current law to some members of the committee are aware of that? Thank you. Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, members, there are several processes in the statute regarding readjustment or realignment of school district boundaries. The one that we're referring to today is the detachment and annexation process. In this process, which is a statutory process, there's a petition that needs to essentially be filed in order to move. There's both proximity and the petition. A property essentially has to be proximate to the district for which the residents want to attach their property to the new school district. But there's a petition process, and as part of that petition process, consent to the petition is required under current law to be granted by the district that will be losing the property. So under the current law, essentially the district, in this case Hopkins, would need to give its consent for the detachment and annexation process to go forward.
Representative Bryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my understanding and assumption, and therefore my inquiring about their involvement in this discussion at an either formal or informal level. But I do appreciate your reply, Representative Downey. But I'd like to follow this just a little further and ask if MSBA would be willing to come to the table. And I'd like to ask, are there any implications in this legislation that they have concern about as precedent setting in boundary decisions for other districts?
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Representative Breinert, we have talked briefly with Representative Downey about this issue, and I don't know whether it feels like a pension bill almost because of the conditions that are laid out here. And I think the piece that does cause a little bit of concern, a little bit of heartburn for us, is the fact that the other board would not be required to approve this piece. And I think I don't certainly want to get in the middle of this issue because it is a very much a local issue when you're talking about issues of attachment and, or excuse me, detachment annexation. And so I think that's one of the issues that I think that needs to be fleshed out a little bit. And I think also you need to look at the tax impact. And those are things that if one body has the authority that those issues aren't discussed, there's going to certainly be some financial impacts to school districts. And so those are two issues. I mean, I think that the conditions here that Representative Downey has pointed out is a unique situation. I think in the history there's not been very many examples of annexation or detachment And so this one happens to be unique, and while it does cause us a little bit of concern on this piece, the uniqueness is something that is to itself. Mr. Chair.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important to remember that the bill simply allows the petition process to move forward. The petition still needs to be made to the county board. They would still have to judge in favor of it, and all of the parties would be at the table as part of that discovery and decision-making process. So it's not as though this bill somehow, you know, streamlines something where this neighborhood group can, you know, conspire with the Edina schools and say, yeah, let's do it. I mean, there's still a long process. It just says that process can now start so long as the annexation district is willing to have a discussion and that petition move forward.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't want to belabor this, and I really don't have any formal thoughts about how this might be amended to address this, but I do have concern that the elected authority of the Hopkins School Board be honored in this process and their responsibility to their entire district and the implications for this decision on that, you know, responsibility they have as public officials be appropriately honored here. So I'm just going to ask, whether it's working with MSBA or what might be at issue here, just to be certain that that happens in the course of this, because I would feel that I have failed in my responsibility if I haven't seen that their appropriate elected authority is honored.
Representative Downey or Mr. Kohler, do you have a response?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a brief response. I think what we're trying to do is balance the respect for that authority with a similar respect for the interests and needs of the families in any neighborhood, in this case, you know, this particular one. And so just the chance to even have the hearing and get the petition heard and have the full display of the arguments pro and con, which would of course include both school districts in that process. This is just giving, I think, a little bit of extra balance and weight to the citizens and the people in this neighborhood for the various reasons we've cited, so that they can actually have a chance to have their voice heard in the process.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Kohler.
We are keenly aware that there is a great deal of concern about this notion of precedence. And that very notion is probably the reason why this has never occurred before. Other than some instances of swapping of lands between two districts, we do not know of anyone who's actually been able to successfully detach and annex from a homeowner's perspective. So clearly, you know, one thing to consider is the statutes, like we said, contain no criteria as to what is an acceptable consent or unacceptable consent. It's absolutely silent. And the other point I just want to make briefly is, you know, I say I'm here speaking on behalf of 400 families. That requires 400 individual petitions for us to achieve what we want to achieve. That's a huge task, and that requires unanimity of a neighborhood, really to an unprecedented level, like I say, in education. That would still be required of any other neighborhood that wanted to consider the same type of route. And again, you would have to have probably very unique situations there as well to get unanimity among every neighborhood member to petition in a similar way. So again, there is still a natural deterrent, even after this legislation, if it were to pass, from keeping this, from preventing this from becoming a firestorm of quick detachments. It's still a huge task ahead of us. Thank you.
Representative Briner, I think you still have the floor. Do you have any other comments or questions? Thank you, Representative Briner. Representative Quam and then Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I first saw the title in this bill, I was concerned, being a former school board member. You know, this is not a trivial matter. I was reassured on a couple points. One, the amendment with the word and, so that, you know, I think there's reasonable criteria here. And the other, it was a Downey bill, and I know that there's no hidden concerns in a Downey bill. We've had some discussions about money, and while, you know, freshman learns pretty quick, almost nothing you do here does not involve money or the Ways and Means Committee. This, like all school things, this committee This I see as an issue about a neighborhood, about families, and about children, and what is best. And this is an easy decision to support this, in my case, because I think that this is what's best for the neighborhood, the children, the families, to be able to go to a close proximity school. To that is a wonderful thing, and I think this facilitates that. Now, when school districts, close or build or move facilities, frequently there are some areas that are inversely impacted. They lose some of that neighborhood community type feel, and I see this bill as a way to restore that. And I see it as putting kids and families and neighborhoods first instead of the dollars or boundaries.
Representative Downey, I was not here when this bill was introduced. What is the current motion for this bill? Where is it going?
Mr. Chair, without you being here, I moved it just to be laid over for possible consideration.
Okay, well, the chair would prefer that we move this bill forward. So you want to change your motion?
Mr. Chair, I would be glad to change my motion to pass House File 2939 as amended and be referred to the General Register.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a quick question for you. I spent my first 2 years here on the Local Government Committee and got to spend more time discussing annexation than a Minneapolis legislator really wants to. I'm not attempting to interfere with the bill in any way, but wouldn't whoever covers local government today be interested in this as an annexation issue? I recognize the statute's more narrowly constructed to school districts, but we spend an awful lot of time on those issues.
Sure. Representative Dabney, I have the conversations we have had with the staff and the members of those committees, they have not requested the bill. But I recognize the fact that the legislature is a fluid place and that could change, but as of right now, that no one has asked for this bill. Right. Representative Dabney.
Questions actually for staff, I think. Mr. Kohler has implied a couple of times that he's paying taxes to the Edina School District. And I assume that that's not the case. Can staff? I assume Edina only gets to levy taxes. Well, the Edina School District only gets to levy taxes in the Edina School District.
It's actually a little known provision that Earhart put in. They levy statewide. It's the most amazing thing. Now, Mr. Kohler, you are. Just kidding. Mr. Kohler, you are shaking your head. So before, I don't want to intercept the questionnaire, but I saw the testifier. Maybe.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. No, we pay our property school property taxes go to the city of the school district of Hopkins currently. What I may have heard me say is that if we were to successfully petition, there could be a period of time where there'd be a hybrid system where some of our taxes would be paid to both be divided between the two districts. That's in the future. That's not currently.
Representative Depp.
Thank you, sir. Question then, this one is for staff because it's technical tax stuff and I'm not going to ask the gentleman to get involved. We spent a fairly contentious hour and a half in tax committee today trying to fix the market value exclusion legislation that was passed last year because it impacted a number of local government entities and their borrowing because some of the borrowing limits were defined in statute in relation to the taxable market value of the jurisdiction, and the legislature changed that. And of course, since it was done in the dark of night, nobody saw this problem coming. Could there be any similar collateral impact on, particularly, I think, the Hopkins district in this case, if this area were to shift over to the Edina School District?
And of course, the representative meant to say that the legislature passed and the governor signed, because the legislature doesn't yet have the ability to make law on its own. But the point is well taken. Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney,
Both the Hopkins and the Edina school districts would be affected by the change in tax base. The map in front of you today shows several parts of the Edina school district that, or several parts of the city of Edina that are located in other school districts. If one looks at all of the property that's within the borders of the city of Edina that is currently within the borders of the Hopkins school district, it's about, it would make the, if that property were transferred immediately with some data from a bit ago, it'd be making the Hopkins school district about 8% smaller and the Edina tax base about 9% bigger. Now, on the map in front of you today that Mr. Kohler brought in with the highlighting, they're talking about a neighborhood that would not extend necessarily to the top, to the very northern part of the map there. But depending on which property owners, with the detachment and annexation process, it would not necessarily have to be all or none of the property owners. There could be a segment of them that would do so. So part of the issue would depend on which sections of property, which parcels of property move. But there would be effects on the tax base in both districts. Both districts have relatively large tax bases on a per pupil basis, and the impact on similarly situated properties would be not entirely large. It would be a rather more modest impact on the value of on individual properties. So, for example, on a $300,000 home, on some data we looked at a couple of years ago, at that point in time, the Hopkins School District tax on a $300,000 home was about $1,127, and in the that was in the Hopkins side, and about $1,151 in the Edina side. After all of this property would be switched, it'd go to about $1,197 on the Hopkins side, and down to $1,079 on the Edina side. So, relatively small swing in the tax on a home of that value at that period of time.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Strom, let me refine my question. The challenge that some of the EDAs and HRAs across the state are experiencing is that their borrowing limits are defined in relation to the taxable market value of the jurisdiction, and some of them were at that limit, and all of a sudden the taxable value shifted south because of the structure of the market value exclusion. Are there similar provisions in education finance that could impact Hopkins or Edina? I'm just trying to do some due diligence here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Daphne, yes, and in fact, Representative Quam's bill that was here the other day talked about the net debt limit for school districts, mm-hmm. and that's set I believe that's one of the provisions that's being amended in the bill that was in tax committee, and that's in Chapter 475. The net debt for school districts is, other than districts located partially or wholly in the city of the first class, is 15% of the market value of the district, so it's a pretty hefty limit. I don't know where either Edina or Hopkins are in terms of that limit. My guess is that neither is pushing too closely to that debt limit right now.
It's a high base
and high, it's a relatively high limit compared to some of those other limits you saw this morning in taxes.
Representative Devin, did you have a follow-up? Otherwise, we do have the superintendent of Hopkins Schools here who does wish to speak.
Oh, well, I was wondering where the Hopkins Schools were, and maybe in his comments if he'd just let us know where they were at in terms of debt limits to make sure that if this were to go forward and be executed, it doesn't.
And I'm sure the superintendent has that number memorized off the top of his head.
You know, I usually write that sort of stuff on the palm of my hand, but thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strong.
Representative Dabney, did you have any more questions or comments before we go to the superintendent?
Thank you very much.
And members, I appreciate your indulgence. My understanding was that public comment had been opened and closed already, but I figured with the superintendent here that the committee would appreciate hearing his thoughts. So welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Dr. John Schultz, Superintendent of Hopkins Public Schools, and to my right is my business manager, John Tope. And as Representative Downey indicated, I did find out about this yesterday. So that this was coming to your committee. Mr. Kohler and his parent group did come to the Hopkins, did approach the Hopkins School Board in November 2010. And primarily the board had an informational session about what this kind of request meant. They had some legal opinion with that of what the request meant. They did not take any formal action on that. They have not done any sort of a fiscal analysis on it to see what the impact would be at that time. That's where it stood. That's where it ended. I met with Mr. Kohler and his group a couple times to understand the request and talk about the obvious fiscal impact of losing those residents and losing those referendum dollars. You had some specific questions about the debt service limit. Is that what you asked? And that is $150 million.
And I guess the specific question maybe to the superintendent or the business manager is, would the reduction in the size of the Hopkins tax base would be the adjusted net tax capacity?
That would be no.
Mr. Chair, the debt limit for school districts is set as a percent of market value, so 50% of market value.
Referendum market value or just market value?
Mr. Chair, it's something approximating estimated market value. There, depending on what they did in taxes this morning with the taxable market value discussion, but it includes the farmland. Let's leave it at that. So
we argued in taxes this morning.
Yeah, I was there for that. Okay, so. So just to be clear, the question I think is that would this reduction in whatever measurement we're using, would it be so high as to put you over 15%? And I believe the answer to that's going to be, well, we can't hear you when you nod.
Mr. Chair, I think our taxable market value is around $9.5 billion. So 15% of that is
so you got a little bit of room.
$1.5 billion, and we're at $150 million. Your answer is not. I probably won't be at that job then if we approach
that
limit.
All right, great. All right, any additional comments?
Well, there'd be our hope that, as I'm sorry, Representative Brenner mentioned, to have our board get an opportunity to look this over more closely from the fiscal impact of that. So that would be our next step as this moves forward.
Okay. Thank you, Superintendent. We appreciate your testimony.
You're welcome.
So we'll go back to member questions. Representative Loon, Representative Dabney, you were done, right?
I am done. Thank you,
Representative Loon, then Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, and Representative Downey. And I missed the first part. I apologize. But in kind of catching up here and listening to the testimony and some of the questions that have been asked, I guess I'm assuming that, you know, bringing this bill to the committee's consideration in the legislature has taken some time, and I think Mr. Kohler's testimony has indicated this has been kind of a long-standing issue with parents and folks in this community. Is that correct?
Mr. Kohler, Chairman, we've been able to identify probably six or seven different instances where parents have brought this issue forward, probably going back 25 years. Our most current effort, as Superintendent Schultz indicated, goes back to the summer of 2010. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And has it gone to what lengths do you know that those parents have gone? Have they actually presented a petition to the Hopkins School Board before, or do you know? Can you give me just a little bit of history of, you know, how formal those have been? Whether they've been formal presentations by parents or more informal discussions?
Mr. Kohler. My understanding is that they're more informal in nature. I've heard mainly via hearsay, but the neighborhood has a long memory, so they can recall when such and such went to go see. It was a different superintendent, so there's no memory there as well. But as far as I know, it was not an official petition.
Senator Bloom?
Thank you. Well, I just... you know, I think in looking at this and hearing the testimony, and I appreciate hearing from the superintendent of the Hopkins schools as well, is that I'm not sure there's a way without the legislature providing some forum for resolving this that the Hopkins School Board could come forward and initiate those discussions. I mean, there is a financial impact here. And, you know, as the school board representatives of that district, you know, one of their main jobs is looking out for the financial interests of their district. But we have another interest here as well, and that's the children and the school children in this particular area in your neighborhood and where they're choosing to go to school. And historically, from your testimony, and I don't have any other data to go by right now, but it looks like most of them are not going to the schools in the district in which they're enrolled. So, I mean, there are the interests of the children and the parents in that district as well. And I'm not sure that the Hopkins School Board alone, without perhaps a little impetus from the legislature, could at least come into a process where this could be resolved, and take into consideration their financial interests as well as sort of the interests and the desires of the children in which our educational system is to serve. So, Representative Downey, I think you've brought forward a proposal here that has merit in trying to resolve this. You know, there's a lot of difficult issues here to be resolved, but I don't see a way in looking at this just in the last, you know, 45 minutes that the school boards alone could do it just because of their financial interests. I don't see a way in which a board alone is going to vote to have this happen. So I do think that this may be an appropriate role for the legislature to step in and try to help work this out. So thank you.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to make a couple of comments. As a school board member, I recall we went to great lengths. Well, you know, obviously, Anoka-Hennepin is the largest school district in the state, probably close to geographically also. And so we went to great, and there was many years where our high school boundaries did the same thing that you are talking about, really segregated communities, and even all the way down to the elementary schools. And we went to great lengths to try to have contiguous communities so that kids were actually playing together, recreating together, parents could gather together through the public school system and really make very strong communities, which that's one of the biggest reasons that I support public schools. So Mr. Kohler, if I were you, I would be doing exactly the same thing as a parent. You know, somebody made the comment of that this might be setting a bad precedent. Actually, I think it might be setting a good precedent. There are times when things need to change, and they are very difficult to change because of the rules and regulations that we have set up. And if we don't have an avenue that is open to breaking precedents, there's a lot of things in our society that would have never changed. The other thing I want to just comment is I agree totally with Representative Loon. I think that the incentive here that we have set up through the state's public school system and the funding of it is not going to incent this change. In fact, we are providing a disincentive. So I would agree. I think that bringing this to this committee and having this discussion is really healthy, and it is healthy, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Representative Anderson, Anzels, and then Greiley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We all like peace in the valley, and in that vein, I notice on your map that part of the, looks like the Edina district in the northeastern corner goes up further north. And I think I heard the word swap mentioned once. Any talk of exchanging land, at least in terms of tax bases, not so much the student aid portion. And when a city wants to annex land from a township, and the utility goes out and puts in the municipal power lines, there's an actual compensation payment. Has there been any talk about Edina actually compensating Hopkins for the loss of tax base and that kind of thing instead of just going one way? In the spirit of compromise, anything has been talked about like that?
Mr. Kohler, did you have a response on that? Or? Downey, did you?
Mr. Chair, again, just to kind of go back to the specific intent of the bill is just to allow that entire process to move forward, whereas today it's kind of bottled up and they don't, as a neighborhood, really have a way to get that process to start. So a lot of that would be part of the discussion and that whole petition activity. Just as a quick historical aside, Representative Anderson, that little spur up in the northern part is where I grew up, in the Morningside neighborhood of Edina. Morningside was actually annexed in and then annexed out and then annexed back in. So there's a long history of Edina Morningside. So if you're suggesting we carve that out, I'm going to advise against that.
All right.
Okay. Sure. Keep it or not, or yeah.
Representative Anderson, did you have a follow-up?
No, I don't want to touch that one either. No. Thank you.
Representative Ansels, then Greiley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And And as usual, I have a suspicion that the sheer wealth involved here in these two districts, I mean, these are two silk stocking districts. We should be so fortunate. And money has the wealth. I'm serious. Wealth has a tendency to ease our way through all of these little inconveniences. And I agree with Representative Loon. I think we shouldn't be timid about this. I think we should move this out of here and move it forward and let the people have what they want.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've often thought that our, especially the metro, maybe the rural, but I'm not as familiar with that, but our metro boundaries, because they were drawn around old farm lines, don't make any sense. And there's bits and pieces of cities that are in school districts. When we bought our first house, our realtor told us, it's at our house, our first house was in Roseville, that our that we went to the Roseville schools. And then when we actually looked in, or that we went to the Mounds View schools, I mean, when we finally had kids that were going to school, we realized we were in the Roseville school district. So the lines, I think, are very confusing. And to have a process where they can be made more sense of, I think, is a really good thing. I am concerned about this. It sounds like this has been a festering problem for years and years, but nonetheless, to have this here in the legislature when it hasn't even had a chance to be discussed in the Hopkins School Board, and that it came up yesterday, I think is too much of a rush job for good process. And if we insist upon voting it out of here today, I'm going to vote against it on that basis. Doesn't sound like I'll be in the majority, but I'm a big stickler for good process, and if it's a good idea, it should survive good process and not need bad process to get it through. So I would urge us to, I know we have deadlines here and so forth, but to take more time and care with it, because I think you can hear, Representative Downey, that there's appeal and support for the idea in some way, shape, or form, including for myself, that you don't need to rush it with a bad process.
Any additional comments from members of the committee? Representative Downey, I'm just going to make my opinions known on it, and then I'd like to hear your closing comments if you have any. For members of the committee, the reason why I support this is right now the Hopkins School District has a veto process, has a veto over this this change taking place. And based on my understanding of the events over the last, not just months, but years and, in fact, decades, this moving this bill forward, I think, is going to encourage a lot of conversations to take place and encourage exactly the sort of reasonableness that Representative Anderson was talking about. And so, you know, this bill, whether it gets passed or signed into law this year, I think moving forward on it is a positive step towards resolving what has been a longstanding issue in this community. So that's the primary reason why the chair is recommending we move this bill forward today. And at the end of the day, I respect the fact that this may be an inconvenience for the Hopkins School District, but that's not the primary concern for this member, at least. I want to do what's good for the kids and good for the parents, and ultimately I haven't really heard anyone make the case for why things should stay the way they are that benefits a decision that clearly parents in the area, a vast majority of parents in the area, do not support the status quo. So that's my opinions on it. Representative Downey, any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a ton to add. A great discussion, as per usual, in this committee. This bill makes no value judgments about either of the two districts. I represent them both. They're both excellent. This is more about the value of parents in a neighborhood, in a community, caring about their kids and wanting what's best for them and giving them the opportunity to have that process play out and get a fair hearing. So I appreciate the discussion and would renew my motion for 2939 as amended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails. It is adopted. Members,
one
quick, two quick announcements. Two quick announcements. Number one, today is Committee Legislative Assistant Rebecca Peichel's birthday. Those interested in lobbying the chair after the floor session can find me at a local establishment wherever Ms. Peichel sends me. So,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Babian.
To that point, it's also my wife's birthday today. I'm sure she's listening back home. So
I'm sure she is. Second of all, next week the committee will be meeting at a different time. It is we'll be meeting at 10:15. I don't know if we have the room assignment yet. We'll make sure to let everybody know. That'll be room 5 or 10. So just stay tuned to your emails, but make your schedule adjustment accordingly. The committee will be meeting at 10:15. Is there anything else?
Mr. Chair?
Is there anything else? Okay. Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering about the movement to that time. Have you checked the schedule to see how many members might be able to attend or not, or what conflicts might exist? I'm just asking.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule's going to be changing for next week, so we're going to try to, obviously, we have deadlines and things going on, especially in evening sessions. We have committees that sometimes overlap with each other, and we're trying to avoid that. So, Representative
Ward.
Yes.
Sorry, I know you thought that I was like.
I don't know what happened.
Eric Estrada's.
Anyway, Representative Estrada, yeah.
Mr. Chair, so it's kind of the same thing as Representative Reiner. You know, some of us have committees at that same time, number one. And number two also is, are you talking about the same days, Tuesday, Wednesday? Are you talking any change in days or anything?
Yeah, Tuesday and Wednesday, Representative Ward.
Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yep, and I am aware that I serve on the Tax Committee myself, Representative Ward. With deadlines and with the changes in schedules, I'm just trying to adjust the schedule accordingly. Of course, we will do everything we can to make sure that if and any votes are taken, that we'll make sure we give members of both parties the opportunity to come back and vote.
Thank you, Representative.
Well played. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I take it with the third committee deadline, it's the chair's intention then to move an omnibus bill next week?
Yes, and Representative Mariani, I believe that's what we're going to be doing. I don't want to commit to that right now, but if we do that, we're going to try to get that out this week so that members have the weekend, or at the very least, we'll get that out on Monday. But we want to, Representative Greiling, the first time we passed a collection of bills, even though we extended the deadline, she wanted to make sure that there was more time. So that's my intent right now. I'll be in contact with Representative Greiling about that, but the short answer is yes.
Super. Thank you.
Yep. Any additional comments or questions from members of the committee? With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.